Secret number 7. Every life is spiritual. One of the peculiarities of modern life is that people violently disagree over religious beliefs and then go on to lead similar lives. Nietzsche's famous remark that God is dead should be changed to God is optional. If the government kept round-the-clock surveillance on those who felt that they were abiding by divine law and those who never gave a thought about God's rulebook, I imagine the sum total of virtue and vice, love and hate, peace and violence would look exactly the same. If anything, the balance of intolerance and lovelessness would probably tilt toward the most loudly religious people in any society. I'm not mentioning this to be contentious. Rather, it's as if the universe has a sense of humor, since at a deep level it's impossible not to lead a spiritual life. You and I are as deeply engaged in making a world as a saint. You can't be fired from the job of creating a world, which is the essence of spirituality. You can't resign from the job even when you refuse to show up. The universe is living through you at this moment. With or without belief in God, the chain of events leading from silent awareness to physical reality remains intact. The operating system of the universe applies to everyone alike, and it works along principles that do not require your cooperation. However, if you decide to lead a consciously spiritual life, a change occurs. The principles of the operating system, which means the rules of creation, become personal. We've already touched upon many of the rules of creation. Let's take a look at how we can line up the universal with the personal. Universal. 1. The universe is a mirror of consciousness. Personal. 1. The events in your life reflect who you are. Nothing in these statements smacks of religion. There isn't any spiritual vocabulary involved. Yet, this first principle is the whole basis for saying that religion, whose root words in Latin mean to tie back, unites the Creator with His creation. The physical world mirrors a mind. It carries intention and intelligence in every atom. Universal. 2. Awareness is collective. We all draw it from a common source. Personal. 2. The people in your life reflect aspects of yourself. In this principle, we see the beginnings of all myth and archetypes, all heroes and quests. The collective psyche shares a level of awareness that goes beyond individuals. When you see other people as aspects of yourself, you are actually seeing faces of mythical types. We are one human being wearing countless masks. When all the masks are stripped off, what remains is essence, the soul, the divine spark. Universal. 3. Awareness expands within itself. Personal. 3. Whatever you pay attention to will grow. In the one reality, consciousness creates itself, which is the same as saying that God is inside His creation. There is no place outside creation for divinity to stand. Omnipresence means that if any place exists, God is there. But whereas God can be attentive to an infinitude of worlds, human beings use attention selectively. We put it one place and take it away from another. By paying attention, we add the creative spark, and that part of our experience, either positive or negative, will grow. Violence begets violence, but so too does love beget love. Universal. 4. Consciousness creates by design. Personal. 4. Nothing is random. Your life is full of signs and symbols. The war between religion and science is old and nearly exhausted, but on one point neither side is willing to budge. Religion sees design in nature as proof of a creator. Science sees randomness in nature as proof of no design at all. Yet there has never been a culture based upon chaos, including the subculture of science. Consciousness looks at the universe and sees design everywhere, even if the spaces in between looked disorganized and random. For the individual, it's impossible not to see order. Every aspect of life from the family outward is based on it. Your brain is set up to perceive patterns. Even an ink blot looks like some kind of image, no matter how hard you try not to see one, because it took patterns of cells to make a brain. The mind is ultimately a machine for making meaning, even when it flirts with meaninglessness, as our century has done so well. Universal. 5. Physical laws operate efficiently, with least effort. Personal. 5. At any given moment, the universe is giving you the best results possible. Nature loves efficiency, which is very odd for something supposedly working at random. When you drop a ball, it falls straight down without taking unexpected detours. When two molecules with the potential for bonding meet, they always bond. There is no room for indecision. This expenditure of least energy, also called the law of least effort, covers human beings too. Certainly, our bodies cannot escape the efficiency of the chemical processes going on in each cell, so it is probable that our whole being is wrapped up in the same principle. Cause and effect aren't just linked. They are linked in the most efficient way possible. This argument also applies to personal growth. The idea is that everyone is doing the best he or she can from his or her own level of consciousness. Universal. 6. Simple forms grow into more complex forms. Personal. 6. Your inner awareness is always evolving. This principle is baffling to the religious and scientific alike. Many religious people believe that God created the world in his image, which implies that creation had nowhere to go after that, except perhaps to devolve from its initial perfection. Scientists accept that entropy is inexorable, entropy being the tendency of energy to dissipate. Thus, in both systems, it's a problem that DNA is a billion times more complex than the first primordial atoms, that the human cortex has vastly increased in size over the past 50,000 years, that life appeared out of inert chemicals, and that new thoughts appear every day out of the blue. Entropy still makes us grow old. It still causes cars to rust and stars to grow cold and die. But the drive of evolution is equally inexorable. Nature has decided to evolve, whatever our opinions about that may be. Universal. 7. Knowledge takes in more and more of the world. Personal. 7. The direction of life is from duality to unity. According to a commonly held idea, ancient cultures saw a unified creation while we moderns look on a fragmented and divided world. The decline of faith has been blamed for this, as has the absence of myth, traditions, and social bonding. But I believe the opposite is true. The ancient way of understanding could barely explain a sliver of all the phenomena in nature, while physics today is on the verge of a theory of everything. The eminent physicist John Wheeler makes a crucial point when he says that before Einstein, human beings thought that they were looking at nature out there, as if through a plate glass window, trying to figure out what external reality was doing. Thanks to Einstein, we realize that we are embedded in nature. The observer changes reality by the very act of observation. Therefore, despite a widespread feeling of psychological alienation, the result of technologies outstripping our ability to keep meaning alive, the duality of man and nature is shrinking with each successive generation. Universal. 8. Evolution develops survival traits that perfectly match the environment. Personal. 8. If you open yourself to the force of evolution, it will carry you where you want to go. Adaptation is a miraculous thing because it proceeds by quantum leaps. When some ancestral dinosaurs developed feathers, they hit upon an adaptation that would be perfect for winged flight. The cells on the outside of their bodies, which were hard and scaly, were useful as armor, but could not contribute to soaring aloft. It's as if evolution set itself a new problem and then took a creative leap to get there. The old use of scales was abandoned for a new world of winged flight, and those same scales would take a leap in a different direction when they turned into hair, allowing the development of furry mammals. Science and religion both worry about this. Science doesn't like the notion that evolution knows where it's going. Darwinian mutations are supposed to be random. Religion doesn't like the notion that God's perfect creation changes when something new is needed. Yet this is a case where explanations have taken a back seat. Without a doubt, the physical world adapts itself by creative leaps that take place at a deeper level. Call this level genetic, or conscious as you will. Universal. 9. Chaos serves evolution. Personal. 9. The fragmented mind cannot get you to unity, but you have to use it along the way. Swirling chaos is a reality, but so is order and growth. Which is dominant? Science has yet to arrive at a conclusion because more than 90% of the physical universe is composed of mysterious dark matter. Since it is yet to be observed, it's an open question what the fate of the cosmos might be. Religion is firmly on the side of order, for the simple reason that God made the world out of chaos. According to science, there is a delicate balance between creation and destruction, with billions of years having elapsed in the maintenance of that balance. However, since cosmic forces on a huge scale haven't been able to rip apart the delicate fabric that wove the beginnings of life, a reasonable person might conclude that evolution is using chaos the way a painter uses the jumbled colors in his box. On the personal level, you can't reach unity while you're ruled by the whirling of thoughts and impulses in your head, but still you can use your mind to find its own source. Unity is the hidden purpose that evolution is working toward, using the fragmented mind as a tool along the way. Like the cosmos, the surface of the mind looks chaotic, but there is a tidal pool of progress at work beneath. Universal. 10. Many invisible levels are enveloped in the physical world. Personal. 10. You are living in many dimensions at once. The appearance of being trapped in time and space is an illusion. With all their hearts, the early quantum pioneers, including Einstein, did not want to create new dimensions beyond time and space. They wanted to explain the universe as it appeared. Yet the current superstring theories that descended from Einstein use at least 11 dimensions to explain the visible world. Religion has always held that God inhabits a world beyond the five senses. Science needs the same transcendent realm to explain how particles separated by billions of light years could act like mirror twins, how light can behave as both particle and wave, and how black holes can transfer matter beyond the clutches of gravity and time. Ultimately, the existence of multi-dimensions is irrefutable. At the simplest level, there had to be somewhere that space and time came from during the Big Bang, and by definition, that somewhere can't be in time and space. Accepting that you, as a citizen of a multidimensional universe, are a multidimensional being is far from mystical then. It's the best hypothesis one can make given the facts. These 10 principles arguably represent ways to conceive of the operating system that keeps one reality going. In truth, the whole thing is inconceivable, and our brains aren't set up to operate on inconceivable lines. They can adapt, however, to living unconsciously. Every creature on Earth is subject to the laws of nature. Only humans think, "What does all this matter to me?" If you opt out and decide to live as if duality is real, you won't see that these 10 principles have any bearing on you. The cosmic joke is that the same laws will continue to uphold your life, even though you don't recognize them. The choice is to be conscious or not, which brings us to the possibility for transformation. No one disputes the fact that life consists of change. But can a person, simply by altering his or her consciousness, actually bring about a deep transformation and not just another superficial change? Transformation and change are two different things, as can be seen in any fairy tale. The poor girl left by her wicked stepmother to scrub the fireplace while her stepsisters go to the ball doesn't improve herself by attending night school. Cinderella is touched by a magic wand and whisked off to the palace as a completed, transformed creature. In fairy tale logic, change is too slow, too gradual, too mundane to satisfy the yearning symbolized by the frog who knows he is a prince, or the ugly duckling who becomes the beautiful swan. There's more than an element of fantasy and a magic touch that will instantaneously deliver a trouble-free life. More important, this fantasy disguises the way true transformation takes place. The key to true transformation is that nature doesn't move forward in step-by-step movements. It takes quantum leaps all the time, and when it does, old ingredients aren't simply recombined. Something new appears in creation for the first time, an emergent property. For example, if you examine hydrogen and oxygen, they are light, gaseous, invisible, and dry. It took a transformation for those two elements to combine and create water, and when that happened, an entirely new set of possibilities emerged with it, the most important from our point of view being life itself. The wetness of water is a perfect example of an emergent property. In a universe without water, wetness can't be derived by shuffling around properties that already exist. Shuffling only produces change. It isn't sufficient for transformation. Wetness had to emerge as something completely new in creation. Once you look closely enough, it turns out that every chemical bond produces an emergent property. I gave the example in passing of sodium and chlorine, two poisons that when combined produce salt, another basic element of life. Your body, which is bonding millions of molecules every second, depends on transformation. Breathing and digestion, to mention just two processes, harness transformation. Food and air aren't just shuffled around, but rather undergo the exact chemical bonding needed to keep you alive. The sugar extracted from an orange travels to the brain and fuels a thought. The emergent property in this case is the newness of the thought. No molecules in the history of the universe ever combined to produce that result. Air entering your lungs combines in thousands of ways to produce cells that have never existed before in just the way they exist in you, and when you use oxygen to move, your muscles are performing actions that, however they may be similar to those of other people, are unique expressions of you. If transformation is the norm, then spiritual transformation falls into place as an extension of where life has been going all along. While still remaining who you are, you can bring about a quantum leap in your awareness, and the sign that the leap is real will be some emergent property you never experienced in the past. Emergent spiritual properties. Clarity of awareness. Knowingness. Reverence for life. Absence of violence. Fearlessness. Non-attachment. Wholeness. These qualify as spiritual transformations because none can be achieved simply by recombining old ingredients of the self. Like the wetness of water, each appears as if by alchemy. The dross of everyday life turns to gold. Clarity means being awake to yourself around the clock, in waking, sleeping, and dreaming. Instead of being overshadowed by externals, your awareness is always open to itself. Clarity feels totally alert and carefree. Knowingness means being in touch with the level of the mind where every question is answered. It is related to genius, although knowingness isn't focused on music, mathematics, or other specific subjects. Your area of knowledge is life itself, and the movement of consciousness on every level. Knowingness feels wise, confident, unshakable, and yet humble. Reverence for life means being in touch with the life force. You feel the same power flowing through you as through every living thing. Even the dust in a beam of light dances to the same rhythm. Therefore, life isn't limited to plants and animals. Everything possesses a glowing, animated vitality. Reverence for life feels warm, connected, and exhilarating. Nonviolence means being in harmony with every action. There is no opposition between what you do and what anyone else does. Your desires do not clash with another person's well-being. When you look around, you see conflict in the world at large, but not in your world. You emanate peace like a force field that subdues conflict in your surroundings. Nonviolence feels peaceful, still, and completely without resistance. Fearlessness means total security. Fear is a jolt from the past. It reminds us of the moment when we left a place of belonging and found ourselves in a place of vulnerability. The Bhagavad Gita says that fear is born of separation, implying that the original cause of fear was the loss of unity. Ultimately, that separation is not a fall from grace, but a loss of who you really are. To be fearless feels, therefore, like yourself. Wholeness means including everything, leaving nothing out. At present, we each experience life sliced up into bits of time, bits of experience, bits of activity. We cling to our limited sense of self to protect the slices from falling apart. But it's impossible to find continuity in this way, hard as the ego tries in its struggle to make life hang together. Wholeness is a state beyond personality. It emerges when I am, as it applies to you, is the same as I am everywhere. Wholeness feels solid, eternal, without beginning or end. True transformation, in my view, depends on the emergence of these properties as your personal experience. They are primal qualities embedded in awareness. They weren't invented by human beings or projected out of lack, need, or hunger. You cannot experience any of them by attaining more of what you already have. Being as nice as possible to others and causing no harm isn't the same as nonviolence in the spiritual sense. Showing courage in the face of danger isn't the same as fearlessness. Feeling stable and well put together isn't the same as wholeness. One must emphasize that however unreachable these things sound, they are completely natural. They are extensions of a process of transformation that has been with you all your life. Each of us is already an emergent property of the universe, a totally new creation from our parents' genes. And yet there is a deeper magic at work. At the chemical level, your parents' genes were only recombined. You got some from one person and some from another. The survival of a certain gene pool extended to include a new generation. It didn't suddenly break down into a new and unknown substance. Somehow, nature used those old building blocks to perform a feat of alchemy because you are not a reconfigured genetic replica. Your genes are just a supporting structure for a unique experience. DNA is the universe's way of becoming conscious of itself. It took eyes for the universe to see what it looks like, ears to hear what it sounds like, and so on. To make sure that it didn't lose interest, the universe created you so that it could be conscious of itself in a way that had never appeared before. Thus, you are an expression of eternity and of this very second, both at once. Transforming yourself is like getting pregnant. Every woman who decides to get pregnant is making a personal decision and yet submitting to a tremendous force of nature. On the one hand, she exerts free will. On the other, she is caught up in inexorable events. Once she has a fertilized seed inside her womb, nature takes over. Producing a child is something you do, and at the same time it is something that is happening to you. The same can be said for any other true transformation. You can make a personal decision to be spiritual, but when spirit really takes hold, you are caught up in forces far beyond yourself. It's as if a surgeon is called into the operating room for an essential surgery and looks down to find that the patient on the table is himself. We've covered the 10 principles that serve as the operating system of one reality. But most people are firmly entrenched in another operating system, the system of duality. They live according to the assumption that they are separate, isolated individuals in a random cosmos where what happens in here is not reflected out there. How then does a person shift from one operating system to the other? Unity is totally different from duality, but you don't have to wait for the end of this journey to live as if you were there in the next. Right now you are living as if limitation and separation must be true. Therefore, you aren't leaving room for them not to be true. Even so, a hidden intelligence is preserving the incredible orderliness of life while allowing change to swirl around in apparent chaos. If exposed to sunlight on a fresh spring day, a living cell would wither and turn to dust, and its DNA would blow away in the wind. But such apparent fragility has survived 2 billion years of constant assault from the elements. In order to see that your own existence is protected by the same intelligence, you have to align with it first. Then a universal law reveals itself. Wholeness remains the same, no matter how much it changes. Your task is to make wholeness more real in your life. As long as you remain on the level where change is dominant, there is no possibility of truly becoming new. Duality maintains its operating system from moment to moment, and as long as you are plugged into it, that system seems real, workable, reliable, and self-validating. The other operating system, the one based on wholeness, works far better than the system you are used to. Wholeness is also real, workable, reliable, and self-validating. For the sake of getting our bearings, let's look at some familiar situations and see how each system would handle them. You arrive at work one day to find out through the grapevine that your company is downsizing. No one can tell you if your job is at risk, but it might be. In the operating system of duality, the following implications start to come into play. I could lose the one thing I need to support myself. Someone else has control over my destiny. I am faced with something unpredictable and unknown. I don't deserve to be blindsided like this. I could be hurt if things go wrong for me. These are all familiar thoughts whenever you find yourself in crisis. Some people manage the threat better than others. You yourself have been through similar situations with more or less success. Yet these concerns are just part of an operating system. They are programmed into the software of the ego with its total fixation on keeping everything under control. What is really being threatened here is not the loss of a job, but loss of control. This reveals just how fragile the ego's grip actually is. Now let's reframe the situation in terms of the operating system programmed from wholeness, or one reality. You come to work to find that the company is downsizing, and the following implications begin to come into play. My deeper self created this situation. Whatever happens, there is a reason. I am surprised, but this change doesn't affect who I am. My life is unfolding according to what is best and most evolutionary for me. I can't lose what's real. The externals will fall into place as they need to. Whatever happens, I can't be hurt. You can see immediately that plugging into the second operating system brings a far greater sense of security. Wholeness is safe. Duality isn't. Protection from external threats is permanent when there are no externals but only yourself unfolding in two worlds, inner and outer, that completely mesh. A skeptic will protest that this new operating system is only a matter of perception, and that just seeing yourself as the creator of your reality doesn't mean you are. But it does. Reality shifts as you do, and when you change your perception of being separate, the one reality responds by shifting with you. The reason everyone doesn't notice this is that the ego-based world with all its demands, pressures, drama, and excesses is highly addictive. And like any addiction, it needs a daily fix, as well as denial that there is any way out. By giving your allegiance to the one reality instead, you won't end the addiction immediately, but you will begin to starve it. Your ego and personality, which give you limited awareness of who you are, will be put on notice that clinging and grasping must come to an end. Your conditioning from the past that told you how to win out over the outside world will no longer help you survive. The support you counted on from external sources such as family, friends, status, possessions, and money will no longer make you feel secure. Rest assured that perception is flexible enough to let go of the addiction to duality. Any event can be seen as coming from the creative center in oneself. At this very moment, I can look at any part of my life and say, I made that. Then it is only one step away to ask, why did I make that, and what do I want to make instead? Let's take another example. You stop at a red light on the way home, but the car behind you doesn't stop and rear-ends you. When you jump out to confront the other driver, he is not apologetic. Sullenly, he begins to give you his insurance information. In one operating system, the following implications come into play. This stranger doesn't have my best interests in mind. If he is lying, I could be left with all the damages. I am the aggrieved party, and he should recognize that, I may have to force him to cooperate. As these ideas come into play, consider the possibility that the car accident didn't cause them. They were already imprinted in your mind, waiting for the moment they'd be needed. You aren't seeing the situation as it really is, but only through your programmed perception. In a different operating system, the following implications are equally valid. This accident was no accident. It's a reflection of myself. The stranger is a messenger. When I find out why this event happened, I will uncover some aspect of myself. I need to pay more attention to some kind of hidden or stuck energy. When I deal with it, I will be glad this accident happened. Does the second viewpoint seem impossible or a matter of wishful thinking? Actually, it is the natural way to perceive the situation from the viewpoint of one reality. The first viewpoint was imprinted by circumstances in your early life. You had to be trained to see others as strangers and to assume that accidents are random events. But instead of relying on such limited consciousness, you can open yourself to expanded possibilities. The larger viewpoint is more generous to you and to the other driver. You aren't antagonists, but rather equal players in a scene that is trying to tell both of you something. The larger viewpoint holds no blame. It puts responsibility equally on every player and allows equally for growth. A car accident is neither right nor wrong. It is an opportunity to reclaim who you are, a creator. If you walk away with a result that moves you closer to your true self, you have grown. So even the ego's demand to win is satisfied by the experience of one reality. Although you may insist that the only thing at stake here is money, and that confrontation is the best way to get paid, that view is not reality, but the reinforcement of a perception. Does the money neutralize what comes with it? Anger, blame, and being made a victim by others? Wholeness brings a seamless, unified world, but you will not know what that world feels like until you give your allegiance to a new operating system. Shifting from the old system to the new one is a process, one that each of us must commit ourselves to every day. Our shared addiction to duality is total. It leaves nothing out. The good news is that no aspect of life is immune to transformation. Every change you make, however small, will be communicated throughout existence. Quite literally, the whole universe will be eavesdropping on you and lending you its support. From its point of view, the formation of a galaxy is no more momentous than the evolution of a single person. Changing your reality to accommodate the seventh secret. The seventh lesson is about alchemy. By any measure, alchemy is magical. You can't turn lead into gold by heating it, beating it, molding it into different shapes, or combining it with any known substance. Those are simply physical changes. Likewise, you will never cause an inner transformation by taking your old self and hammering it with criticism, heating it up with exciting experiences, reshaping how you look physically, or connecting with new people. How then does the magic work? It works according to the principles that make up the universe's operating system. When you consciously align with them, you give yourself an opening for transformation. Write down the 10 principles as they personally apply to you and begin to live them. Carry them around with you. Refer to them as reminders every few days. It's better to focus with intention on one principle a day than trying to include too many at once. Here are examples of how you might apply these universal principles on a daily basis. The events in my life reflect who I am. I will apply one experience today to myself. Whatever catches my attention is trying to tell me something. If I feel angry at anyone, I will see if what I dislike in the person actually exists in me. If an overheard conversation catches my attention, I will take those words as a personal message. I want to find the world that is inside me. The people in my life reflect aspects of myself. I am a composite of every person who is important to me. I am going to look upon friends and family as a group picture of me. Each stands for a quality I want to see in myself or want to reject. Yet in reality, I am the whole picture. I will gain the most knowledge from those people I intensely love and intensely dislike. The one reflects my highest aspirations, the other reflects my deepest fears of what lies inside me. Whatever I pay attention to will grow. I will take inventory of how I'm using my attention. I will keep a log of how much time I spend with television, video games, the computer, hobbies, gossip, work I don't care about, work I am passionate about, activities that fascinate me, and fantasies of escape or fulfillment. In this way, I will find out what aspects of my life are going to grow. Then I will ask, what do I want to grow in my life? This will tell me where my attention needs to shift. Nothing is random. My life is full of signs and symbols. I will look for patterns in my life. These patterns could be anywhere, in what others say to me, the way they treat me, the way I react to situations. I am weaving the tapestry of my world every day, and I need to know what design I am making. I will look for signs that show me my hidden beliefs. Do I meet opportunities for success or failure? These are symbols for whether I believe I have personal power or not. I will look for signs about my belief in whether I am loved and deserve love or not. At any given moment, the universe is giving me the best results possible. I will concentrate today on the gifts in my life. I will focus on what is working instead of what isn't. I will appreciate this world of light and shadow. I will receive with grace the remarkable gift of awareness. I will notice how my own level of awareness makes me perceive the world I am co-creating. My inner awareness is always evolving. Where do I stand right now? How far have I come on my chosen path? Even if I don't see immediate results outside myself, do I feel that I am growing inside? Today I will face these questions and honestly ask where I stand. I will experience my awareness not as a stream of thoughts, but as the potential for becoming who I want to be. I will look at my limitations and boundaries with the intention of expanding beyond them. The direction of life is from duality to unity. Today I want to belong. I want to feel safe and at home. I want to be aware of what it's like simply to be, without defenses or desires. I will appreciate the flow of life for what it is, my own true self. I will notice those moments of intimacy with myself when I feel that I am is enough to sustain me forever. I will lie on the grass looking at the sky, feeling myself at one with nature, expanding until my being fades into the infinite. If I open myself to the force of evolution, it will carry me where I want to go. Today is for long-term thinking about myself. What is my vision of life? How does that vision apply to me? I want my vision to unfold without struggle. Is that happening? If not, where am I putting up resistance? I will look at the beliefs that seem to hold me back the most. Am I depending on others instead of being responsible for my own evolution? Have I allowed myself to focus on external rewards as a substitute for inner growth? Today I will rededicate myself to inner awareness, knowing that it is the home of the evolutionary impulse that drives the universe. The fragmented mind cannot get me to unity, but I have to use it along the way. What does unity really mean to me? What experiences of oneness can I look back upon? Today I will remember the difference between being at one with myself and being scattered. I will find my center, my peace, my ability to go with the flow. The thoughts and desires that drive me are not the ultimate reality. They are just a way to get myself back to oneness. I will remember that thoughts come and go like leaves in the wind, but the core of consciousness is forever. My goal is to live from that core. I am living in many dimensions at once. The appearance of being trapped in time and space is an illusion. Today I will experience myself beyond limitations. I will set time aside to be present with myself in silence. As I breathe, I will see my being spreading outward in all directions. As I settle into my own inner silence, any image that comes to mind will be asked to join my being. I will include anyone and anything that comes to mind, saying, "You and I are one at the level of being. Come, join me beyond the drama of space and time." In the same way, I will experience love as a light that begins in my heart and spreads out as far as my awareness can reach. As images arise in my mind, I will send love and light in their direction.